Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We have plenty to do, ladies and gentlemen. It's looking a bit grim out there today. The blue sky has disappeared for the moment, but perhaps it will return as this show goes through the gears and as we get from 10 and to 11 to 12 and then to 1 o'clock, of course, as well. We've got lots to do this morning. Ben Habib is going to join us, former MEP, chairman, of course, of Brexit Watch. We'll be talking about Brexit. We'll be talking about the migrant problem. We'll be talking an awful lot about the Albanian migrant problem because we've got some incredible footage from last night right here in the centre of London, where an awful lot of Albanians were out and about in very expensive cars celebrating Albanian Independence Day, apparently. They were holding up the traffic, they were honking their horns, the police were out in force doing absolutely nothing about it, of course. And people who are on the side of, shall we say, unfettered migration are all going, what's wrong with it? They're all having a good time. Isn't it nice to see people having a good time? Well, I'll show you the video in a little while and you can make up your own minds as to whether or not this is something that you would like to see on a regular basis. Perhaps we could celebrate, you know, everybody's Independence Day around about midnight in Parliament Square every single night. You know, you could have 365 days a year of it. But I don't really think most sensible people would say that that is the way to proceed. We'll be talking as well about the NHS, of course, because an awful lot of stories more troubling than yesterday, particularly one in the Telegraph this morning, in which it says that an awful lot of people are going to be going after compensation from the NHS because their surgeries or their procedures were put off because of COVID. £1.3 billion is the compensation pot. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, is our money. We'll also be talking about the National Grid and why it is necessary for them to say that they might have to switch off electricity to certain homes at certain times. They're offering incentives for people to switch off their electricity or to turn it down a bit during peak times. Now, they were supposed to be launching it today. They decided not to launch it, but still, it is something that is in the back of their minds. And I've just got one question for you, as many people have got. If there is going to be a shortage of electricity in this country, why are all the Christmas lights up? Somebody's going to tell me, oh, it doesn't take much electricity to drive Christmas lights. Well, you might say that, but it takes some, doesn't it? After all, we should be told. Also, we'll be talking, of course, to Laura Dodsworth. She's going to be talking about the harms bill that is also a big piece of news this morning. She's going to, the big tech are going to remove legal but harmful content. But maybe they're not. We'll find out from Laura what that's all about. Gavin Mortimer is here as well, and Rob Clark, because China's back in the news. Rishi Sunak made a speech last night saying the golden era of relations, good relations between Britain and China, is now officially over. That, you might remember, was a phrase used by David Cameron when he reached out to China on the basis that they were better inside the tent than out. Well, surely the experience with Russia would suggest that putting them outside the tent isn't the greatest of ideas. We'll find out. Plus, we want your calls as well, of course, 0344 499 1000. Let's not forget the World Cup. Mark Saggers is here. He's going to be sitting in with us, telling us all about what's going to happen tonight when England take on Wales, or Wales take on England. I said rather tongue-in-cheek that I thought Wales would win. They might well do. We'll be going out to Doha as well. Holly Hudson's there, and Jim White from TalkSport will also talk us through what he thinks is going to happen later on. And of course, we've got more breaking news on Gary Lineker. He's been called racist by the Qataris. They say he's been very, very nasty about Qatar when he's been reporting for the BBC. And in fact, he didn't bother actually going to talk to them, like a proper journalist would have done, in order to find out what they thought about what he was about to say about them. And also, it turns out, he actually took some money from the Qatari regime after they won the bid for the World Cup. £1.6 million, to be precise. Brilliant. Great old life, isn't it, for Gary, captain of the hypocrites. 0344 499 1000 is the number. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest show you've ever seen. This is Talk TV. Well, Welcome and a very good morning to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. It's hard to get away from the Albanian story. Let's say a very good morning to Ben Habib and find out what he makes of it all. Ben, a very good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
I see that the BBC have noticed that you might be quite a useful commentator to have on Question Time. So well done for getting on there. They seem to be sort of slightly changing their policy, actually having some sensible people on it for a change to say some sensible things.
Well, that's very kind of you. I enjoyed my time. I thought Fiona Bruce was fantastic. Yeah. I know she gets a lot of flack from various different directions, but, you know, I thought she was very balanced and gave everyone an opportunity to speak. And, you know, I thought I made, you know, the point for effectively for Brexit, lower regulations, lower taxes, and making it, you know, pay to work, which seems an unfashionable concept at the moment.
Doesn't it just? as indeed seems to be unfashionable, particularly in London, but I say London deliberately because outside of London, I think people have a very different attitude. But incredible stats here from asylum applications of refugees from Albania this morning. Harry Cole from The Sun put this out. UK accepts a whopping 55.4% of Albanian asylum applications. With the same number of applications, France takes 2.3%, Italy 19.9%, Spain 4%, Belgium 3%, Greece 0.3%, Germany, Sweden, Holland and Austria 0%. So what is going on in Britain that we take 55.4% of Albanian asylum applications?
Well, you know, what's really interesting about the numbers you've just reeled off, Mike, is that these people are clearly settling in the UK, aren't they? Mm. The Schengen zone has enabled people from Albania to, once they've entered, you know, the European Union, to rapidly come across to our shores. And it says a couple of things. It says, one, they've got no border control. Well, we know that. Two, that they're aiding and abetting and promoting these people to come across to the United Kingdom. And three, and this is the important thing from our perspective, is that we are a very attractive country for them to come to. Mm. And they believe they can get here and stay here. And that's what the stats indicate.
Because they can.
They're getting away because they can. And it's a complete breakdown in governance. It's got nothing to do with the European Court of Human Rights. It's got nothing to do with international treaty commitments or international laws or indeed domestic laws, Mike. This is a complete breakdown in governance by our own institutions. Border force isn't working. We've got to stop these people coming across into our territorial waters at the point of entry. If we're going to do any kind of bilateral agreement with France, it should be this, that we, British boats, have the right to patrol French waters. We should have the right for border force to actually now go into French waters and prevent these people from even getting anywhere near our territorial waters. That's the kind of approach we should be having. Not a bilateral agreement where we pay them £62 million this year, another £72 million next year, and they do nothing. We've got to take control back into British hands. That was the whole point about taking back control of our borders. It wasn't to design elaborate, expensive, convoluted, unworkable deportation schemes. It was to ensure that people never entered the UK illegally in the first place. Yeah. And that's where the concentration of government needs to be. So Ella Braverman needs to stop thinking about domestic law, which takes ages to deliver. You know, changes in domestic law take ages to deliver. And with this broken Conservative government, the chances of actually delivering any new legislation, which might be remotely controversial, is close to nil. Mm. No, she's got all the armament she needs from a legal perspective. She needs to just make sure border force does their job. And I just want to say one more thing before I finish. But before people say, before detractors say, well, border force have to rescue these people because they made this perilous journey into the channel. They can't be left to suffer in the channel at risk of losing their lives. Well, remember, these people paid £3,000 willfully to make that illegal journey. It's up to them to take responsibility for their own safety. And under international law, we are not obliged to give them a safe passage to the UK. Under UNCLOS, which is the UN Convention of the Law of the Seas, Article 98, we are only obliged to rescue them if it's reasonable to do so.
Yes.
And I would argue that it is entirely unreasonable for British Border Force to be rescuing people who are literally trying to enter the country illegally. Mm. They've got to send them back. And if they choose to jump out of their dinghies and self-harm, well, that's their problem. Mm. It's not a British-made problem. It's a French-made problem. and we need to push these people back to France.
No, it seems as though at every point, the rather like the police in London being outwitted by Just Stop Oil every single time they decide to do anything, you know, these asylum seekers and the gang masters who are bringing them here, because let's face it, that's what they are, the criminal gangs, are outsmarting Border Force and outsmarting the Home Office. But let me show you this video, Ben. I don't know whether you've seen this from last night. This was in Westminster, around Parliament Square. A group of people celebrating Albanian Independence Day. Now, this apparently went on for some hours. The police were there trying to move these cars on. But just have a look at the cars, apart from anything else. There's a lot of Albanian flags. Nothing wrong with that. Two women in Albanian national dress. Nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with any of it specifically. But it just shows you. There's somebody doing sort of, you know, wheelies, which I'm pretty sure if I did, I'd be arrested for. Burning rubber on the streets of London. I mean, it's extraordinary. I don't think there's one car in this little cavalcade of traffic worth less than £100,000. I mean, if these are the people who are coming desperately from Albania to seek refuge, they're doing all right, aren't they?
Well, they've come across as economic migrants and they've done terribly well. But that last night, I don't think was a celebration of Albanian independence. Last night was a show of force to Parliament about Albanians present in the United Kingdom. They know that their arrival in this country across the channel illegally is now coming under scrutiny. And that was their pushback. That was them actually giving Parliament their proverbial middle finger. That's how I see it. Yeah. I don't know how you see it, Mike, but that was no one's ever celebrated Albanian independence before.
I don't remember it ever being done, you know, up until so far this year. Do you?
No, and it's, well, I don't recall it being a British colony either. Why would they be celebrating it here?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. But of course, the reaction on social media has been interesting, to say the least. You know, those who favour unfettered migration say, oh, isn't it nice to see some young people out enjoying themselves? Well, that's one way of looking at it. Other people are going, what on earth is going on? And people are saying, well, do you get upset when people celebrate Diwali, or do you get upset when people celebrate Eid? Well, no, because that's not what's going on here. There is, as you say, some kind of show of force going on. Yeah, we're here. Good luck trying to get rid of us.
What are you going to do about it?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing, that was one clip, and perhaps that's less of an outrageous clip than the many clips which I've seen on Twitter and other places which go unreported on by mainstream media, of violence across London, of, you know, I don't know where these ethnic minorities come from, but lots of ethnic minorities actually challenging the police, throwing bottles at them, the police having to, you know, escape at high speed in their vehicles, not challenging these people in the end, trying to do it, but then being overwhelmed. We saw that big riot in Leicester between Pakistanis and Indians over a cricket match. I mean, what is going on in the United Kingdom? Is this where we want the country to go? Do we want the country to effectively import values and behaviour which is, you know, damaging to the fabric of our country? What are we up to?
And these are the same people who say we shouldn't go to Qatar and let and make them sort of somehow bend to our will, and that the Qataris should be able to live the life that they want to live. We shouldn't be interfering with their government and their rules. Well, really?
We're completely at sixes and sevens over Qatar, aren't we? We've had billions and billions of pounds invested in London. We never blinked from the Qataris. Sadiq Khan is now found his moral compass, and he's banned advertising from Qataris and the Tube. As a result, the Qataris have said they're not going to invest another penny in London. We've got Gary Lineker mouthing off now in Qatar, having taken £1.6 million. I mean, it's all over the place. And we've got the same kind of problem with Rishi Sunak in China. I know you're going to talk about China later. But he talks about robust pragmatism. I mean, either you see China as a geopolitical threat, in which case you've got to challenge it on all fronts, particularly economically, or you don't, in which case you can engage with it. But that you can't have robust pragmatism. Robust pragmatism, for me, is, you know, political speak for, well, we recognize China's a threat, but we haven't got the political will to do anything about it. We rely too much on trade with China, so we're just going to let this thing slip. That's what Rishi Sunak is saying, effectively, in that one phrase.
Yeah. Exactly right. Ben, stay where you are. We're going to come back to you. We're going to talk some more about China. We'll talk some more as well, of course, about what is going on inside the government as we watch it kind of doing not very much of anything at all, it seems to me. Christmas is coming. The goose is not getting fat at all. In fact, it's not even getting out. This is Talk TV.
Online on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Lots of people very happy that we're talking to Ben Habib this morning because he's talking an awful lot of sense about a great many things, including, of course, what's going wrong at the Home Office. I mean, Suella Braverman seems to have become slightly denuded since she first got the job as Home Secretary. Ben, what I would say about Suella Braverman is when she came in, everybody was saying, well, here's somebody who knows the business of law. Here's somebody who worked as a lawyer in the Home Office, knows how to get around the various sort of lefty barristers who keep preventing the deportations of people. I was listening to a lawyer this morning who said about 10 years ago we were deporting something like 30,000 people a year. Now it's barely a few hundred.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, our system has just become locked in inactivity and inability to function. And there's an obsession with politicians nowadays to change the law. Every time there's a problem, they need to pass a new law. Mm. Often we have all the levers we need to deal with the problem anyway. It's just a matter of using the levers. And I think they use the passage of legislation as an excuse effectively to do nothing, because they keep, you know, they keep distracting us from the reality. They keep saying, well, look, we're going to introduce this new law which will make it immediately possible to do X, Y, and Z. And that'll take a year. And another year goes by and nothing's happened. You know, we had this with the Rwanda plan. The Rwanda plan perhaps is one of the best examples of it. You know, they come up with a plan, they spend lots of money on it, lots of fanfare. It doesn't bear that much scrutiny because you know that it's fraught with difficulties, It's very expensive, unlikely to be implemented. But it kept everyone distracted at a cost of £140 million to the British taxpayer. It kept us distracted for 6 months. You don't hear anyone talking about Rwanda anymore. We now talk about new legislation that they want to put in place, which they hitherto haven't got. But I can inform Suella that actually under the new Nationality and Borders Act, we already have the right to summarily send back anyone who's entered the country from a safe country. We already have that right. It was put into place under the Nationality and Borders Bill, which is now the Act. And she should use it. And she should use border force properly. You know, it's not a matter of passing new law. It's a matter of using the system that we've already got to, you know, protect the United Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly right. And I mean, here's a plan for them. You know, if you do actually do some kind of a deal with individual countries because you're outside of the European Union, but those deals are actually worse than the ones that are inside the European Union, then clearly it's got nothing to do necessarily with taking back control of your borders, because actually, if anything, some of the countries in Europe are doing better at stopping migrants than we are.
Well, they're not stopping in those countries. It says a lot about those countries that they travel straight through them using the Schengen zone to the United Kingdom. I mean, we must be the most attractive country in Europe.
Well, we are. That's the point.
So much for Remainers. You know, Remainers keep saying the UK's inward-looking, racist, misogynistic, awful country in which to live. But all these people want to come here.
But doesn't that tell you something about how to stop it happening? You make it less attractive. You don't make it quite so nice to come here. You don't make it so easy for them to come here and get a house or to get funding, you know, or anything.
£7 million a day we're spending on accommodation. On top of that, we give them right to free healthcare, free dentistry, and we put cash in their pockets. You know, the cost to the exchequer is about £5 billion a year in my estimate, on the current numbers. And of course, that's rising. And we've got a cost of living crisis. We've got an NHS that can't cope. We've had, by the way, this is relevant to this. In the last 12 years of Tory government, the population of the United Kingdom has gone up by 4.5 million people.
Yes.
When we left the EU, we gave settled status to 6.5 million EU member state citizens. Last year, we took in 504,000 net new immigrants into the United Kingdom. Our country is collapsing under the weight of people coming in. And our GDP is not growing. Our taxes are going up. Our borrowings are already higher than the government can tolerate. People need to realize that we are creaking. We're creaking at the seams, as underpaying it. We're breaking.
Oh, we totally are. And even the CBI has admitted last week at their conference that actually you don't get growth by importing labour, particularly cheap labour. It doesn't work because you've got to offer the services to those people who you invite in to work for very small amounts of money, so they're not paying very much tax. So actually, it's a kind of a net minus growth because you're effectively paying more money to look after them than they're actually giving you back in tax.
Yeah, what seems to be lost on the government and a lot of large corporations who sustain themselves through this cheap labour is that we're a first world country, but we operate like a third world country, wanting to use cheap labour as a mechanism to promote economic growth. It ain't going to happen. If you want to have a strong currency, you want to be part of the first world, you've got to upskill existing workforces. You've got to automate. You've got to increase productivity. We've got a huge problem with productivity in the UK, and that's because we keep relying on cheap labour. Mm. We've had this open-door immigration policy, which has sapped us of the ability to generate productivity. And without productivity, we won't get growth. And that's the problem. The government just doesn't get it.
No.
It doesn't have any joined-up thinking. You know, it needs to look 5-10 years hence, decide what its industrial labour taxation policy is going to be, and then set a plan and stick with it and go for growth. Upskill. We've got 5.7 million people claiming universal credit to greater or lesser extent.
Yes.
That's nearly twice what it was before lockdowns. You know, this cannot go on. The country is going to break. And as I said the other day on that program you mentioned at the beginning of this program, you know, it's possible now on universal credit to earn pretty close to what you would get on the national average wage. Mm. So there's no incentive to go out to work. No. Why would people go to work if they can sit at home and get pretty much the same amount of money? The economy is breaking under the burden of 12 years of Tory misgovernance. And it's got to change in every sphere. And all these spheres, sorry, I'm kind of ranting.
No, it's good. Good.
All these spheres are related. You know, migration, NHS, economic pressures, debt burden, high taxes, they're all interrelated. They don't stand individually as separate boxes which need separate, you know, to be addressed separately. You need a holistic approach to all of them to make sure the UK can stand up on its own two feet. The people in the UK can stand up on their own two feet, get a job, earn proper money, not be ripped off by the tax man, have aspiration, go forward with confidence. You know, that's what creates a dynamic economy, not this kind of redistribution of wealth that the government is fixated on.
Yeah. Well, redistribution of wealth to the point where everybody's a lot poorer. It's a very odd way to do it. Ben, thank you very much indeed. Ben Habib talking an awful lot of sense, former MEP, chairman, of course, with Brexit Watch. He's right, isn't he? The country's going to the dogs. We've had three prime ministers. We've had God knows how many home secretaries. We've got unbridled immigration. Nobody knows when they can see a doctor. It is a shambles, ladies and gentlemen. Let's fix it, shall we? This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We've got lots going on today and many, many people to talk to, including lots of you. Do keep your calls coming in, of course, 0344 499 1000. Ben Habib talks so much sense and in an authoritative way, says Pam. He needs to start a party alongside other similarly minded people. And soon, the Tories really would be toast. And here's one from somebody who doesn't give a name. As the football is on at the moment, and you mentioned Gary Lineker as captain of the hypocrites, I thought for the duration of the World Cup, he could feature on Plank of the Week, the Hypocrites 11. Well, I think we certainly could do that. And Christopher in Leeds says, I hear what you're saying about immigration. Do you realise the government aren't listening? Talk privately to a Conservative MP and they don't care. Well, that's a bit disturbing, isn't it? We showed you a video earlier of people in the centre of London last night in very, very expensive cars celebrating Albanian Independence Day. This is after we've heard that Britain is alone in accepting more than 50% of the asylum applications from people coming from Albania, where most of the countries in the European Union either accept none or a very, very tiny percentage, less than 5 in most cases. So we alone seem to be very welcoming to Albanian refugees. We don't know why they come here. They're not fleeing a war zone. They're part of NATO. They're a country that is indeed a trading partner with the rest of Europe, and it's soon to be a member of the European Union probably as well. So it's all very confusing. But as you heard from Ben Habib there, we've got a lot more people living here now than we had before. Like in 10 years, we've gone up by possibly 5 million, maybe more. It's putting an awful lot of pressure on the NHS, an awful lot of pressure on everything, on roads, on schools, on infrastructure. Let's talk now to Lucy Johnson, Health and Social Affairs Editor at the Sunday Express, because an amazing story, and there's been several amazing stories about the NHS, but one which has caught our eye this morning. The NHS has created a 1.3 billion compensation pot for claims made by people who should have had operations or who have become more unhealthy as a result of the COVID restrictions. Lucy, very good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
So this is really, we've got a lot of excess deaths now. We have, they've been running higher than, or as high as pandemic levels of excess deaths, but they're not COVID related, most of them. Only a small percentage of them are COVID related. It was something many people warned about. I think you were probably one of them for a long time. If you tell people to stay at home, if you effectively cut down non-COVID work, then this is one of the legacies. And I'm afraid we're seeing the consequences. So the numbers are running something like in a month, 1 week in October, 16% above the five-year average of excess deaths. That's about, it was about 1,500 excess deaths a week. And they're still higher than the five-year average is still up.
And the NHS appears to be sort of girding its loins, if you like, getting ready for a load of claims coming in, which could range from anything from clinical negligence to just missed appointments to loved ones dying as a result of NHS kind of NHS's inability to treat them. So, I mean, it's kind of open-ended, this. It could go on forever.
It could, and indeed it's at a time when we are facing crippling waiting lists. We're coming into winter, so we're seeing a surge in respiratory viruses, as we always do, including flu. We've got the nurses going on strike. We've got other parts of, you know, hospital staff also threatening to strike. It really needs to, you know, we've had five health secretaries, and we need to actually look at the roots of some of these problems and get underneath them. And no one seems to be doing that.
No.
It seems a lot of firefighting and headline grabbing, you know, pots of money here and pots of money there. But actually, we need to get the health service by the roots and actually look at new restructuring it and reforming it.
I mean, I know it seems a very long time ago now, but I seem to remember back in the dark sort of historical past, Rishi Sunak was Chancellor and he was promising to raise national insurance in order to cut down on the backlog. Everybody seems to have forgotten about that now.
Well, I mean, interestingly, there's a recent report from the, I think, the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which has found that the putting more money into the NHS hasn't led to a reduction in backlog. So they're not, they've got more money to treat, but then they're treating less people. So I'm not sure that just throwing money at this is actually going to help. The NHS is not functioning. I know there's been calls recently from a number of people. A lot of consultants and people I speak to sort of can't speak out. There's a lot of censorship. But there are a number of people that do believe the NHS should go back to 7 day working. Disease doesn't recognize the weekends or bank holidays, and that's one of the things, you know, it kind of stops the flow. If you get ill at the weekend, you know, you're probably about 11% more likely to die, and you're losing a lot of capacity by not working at weekends. So that's just one thing that could be done, but of course the doctors don't want to do that.
Well, no, they don't. And we hear constantly that, you know, it's all the Tories' fault, it's the government's fault. But I keep saying to people, yeah, but surely the people that run the NHS should bear some responsibility for how the NHS is run. And now we've got two strike days supposedly coming up in December, which are hardly going to be helpful, are they?
Well, no. I mean, I'm, you know, it's very worrying, and worrying that we're going to, there are talks about drafting in the army to deal with emergencies. I mean, the army are trained in certain things, but not to do complex diagnostic work. So that's not really a solution. And I think that it could be a good idea that the NHS does have more control over how it runs itself. There are so many layers and there's so much top-down control. The government is trying to organise the NHS, always putting on new targets, new rules and restrictions and, you know, new sort of aims. But actually, it could be argued that the NHS actually needs more independence to work out how it needs to run itself. So, I mean, it's a complex area, but there are a number of things, you know, for one thing, the IT system. There have been successive governments which have tried to make that work, and so that GPs, hospitals, pharmacies can all talk to each other, but it hasn't, and no one's really put in enough money to make that run smoothly. Social care, you know, that's not joined to the NHS. The NHS is a golden goose, isn't it? Always gets more money. But looking after people, which is a huge part of it, I think we've got something like 25% of beds, up to that much, are taken up by people who are fit to leave but have nowhere to go because there's no care for them in the community. So it's complex, but just throwing bits of money in and money for compensation claims is really not going to cut it, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. And I hear a lot of people, particularly community-based people, saying that, you know, the old cottage hospitals were a good idea. They were all kind of done away with. The local sort of aspect of NHS care has disappeared, and an awful lot of people are having to go to big centralised hospitals and hubs and all of that. And maybe that was a mistake. Maybe they could go back to the more localised way of treating people.
Well, I think you've got a really good point there. And in fact, as we come into winter, we're going to have a lot of older people, vulnerable people, that will need just a little bit of care while they get over flus and other sort of infections. They don't need the high-tech hospital beds that we've got. And I've got, you know, speaking to various experts, it's estimated we need about 150 sort of low-tech hospital beds to get us through the winter, and that would be a good idea. But as we said earlier, you know, we've got five health secretaries over 2 years. My line's cut.
Oh, well. Well, we can still see you. Oh, no, we can't. We've just lost her. Don't worry. Lucy, you're back. There you go.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure what happened there. But anyway, five secretaries in 2 years. It's, you know, no one's really looking to look at the roots of this. It's just the headline grabbing.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. Listen, Lucy, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Sorry about the missing line there for a couple of moments. Lucy Johnson, Health and Social Affairs Editor at the Sunday Express. Once again, you know, we talk about the NHS practically every week on this show, sometimes practically every day. But we're now reaching a new level of crisis, because not only is there a strike coming, not only are there supposedly not enough nurses or doctors, but now the NHS is setting aside over £1 billion. It could be 1.3, possibly £1.5 billion to pay people off who are going to sue them over negligence because of COVID restrictions and because of the fact that many of their loved ones actually lost their lives due to NHS policy. And as Lucy said, I was one of the people who was saying that this would be a problem. I was one of the people warning about it right from the beginning. Laura Dodsworth is coming up after 11. She was another one. We've got this new data, by the way, from the ONS, the Office for National Statistics. It's on ethnicity in Britain. A total of 81.7% of residents in England and Wales identified their ethnic group as white on the day of the 2021 census. That's down from 86% a decade earlier, according to the ONS. So people identifying themselves as white have gone down to 81.7% of the population, according to the 2021 census, down from 86% in 2011. 0344 499 1000. We'll take some calls coming up. We'll also talk about China, of course, as well, and much else besides. Mark Saggers is going to be here to give us a preview of Wales v England tonight in the World Cup. The first time ever that two teams from the United Kingdom have actually met in a World Cup. Extraordinary. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio. Exhalation. Conversation. Confrontation.
It's not all bad news.
It's Talk Radio. The home of common sense. See it. Hear it. Think it. Talk radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We've got a great text here from somebody who doesn't give a name, unfortunately. Dear Fat Graham, I've been listening to you talk rubbish for 3 years now. That's pretty good. Keep listening for another 3 years, you'll hear some more rubbish. Your parents spelt Y-O-U-R-E, so as in you are parents, so not really very good there. Now need to claim back the money spent on your education, as it was obviously wasted. Well, I had a state education, so I guess that means I can claim back some tax then, can I? Thanks for your thoughts. Keep listening. You might learn something, like how to spell your, for example. Let's talk to Chris, who's in Grimsby. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Very well, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, with regards Qatar, this country is not the arbiter of the world. Their laws are their laws, and it's nothing to do with us.
Right.
So, same as Iraq and other places in the world where people are being treated badly.
Yeah.
You can sympathise with them, but you can't stick your nose in and try telling them what to do.
No, I agree with that.
Imagine Americans visiting this country and they all bear in arms.
Mm.
We'd stop them at the border and say, sorry, you cannot bring goods into the country.
Right.
They turn around and say, well, that's what we do at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, sorry, it's our laws and you've got to abide by them the same as they have over in Qatar.
Right, quite right too. When in Rome and all that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And as regards the migrants, I think this country is giving good ideas to anybody that would want to invade us.
Yes.
Because all they've got to do is put their army into small dinghies and our border force will bring them ashore with the Kalashnikovs and all the rest of
it. Oh, I know. It's a joke, isn't it?
It is. It's one big joke. This country has really, really gone to the dogs.
Yes, I'm afraid it has.
And it's about time the government got their act together. Instead of talking rubbish, just get the border force, get the navy, and stop them.
It's yes.
As simple as that.
Well, that's supposed to be their job, isn't it? Listen, Chris, thank you very much for your call. The border force is called the border force. They're neither a force, and they don't seem to know what a border is. Apart from that, it works really well. Brilliant. Now, speaking of things that work really well, Mark Sagers is back. Oh, welcome. Yeah. Welcome. The World Cup is back on. If you're looking out the window, we'll try and cheer you up by showing you a picture of the Qatar skyline, where it looks rather nice today. Sunny again in Qatar. It must be nice, mustn't it? You wake up every day, it's the same weather.
Imagine that. There's no clouds, obviously.
No.
But there is a dark cloud over England.
Yeah, is there? There is a dark cloud outside, I must say. But let's kick things off. I can't believe, really, in a way, that it's the first time two nations from the United Kingdom have met in the World Cup. Seems extraordinary.
Well, they haven't qualified for so long, Wales, anyway. The last time they qualified, Mark Hughes scored their winner. And
England, Scotland have been at World Cups together, but they've just never met, I suppose.
No, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't think they have, actually.
I don't think they have.
So it is the first time ever. Not that that's going to make any difference to this game, because Wales really are very poor, and England haven't done themselves justice in that last game.
That Friday night game was awful, wasn't it?
It was awful.
I mean, I sat through it because it felt like I should. I was watching it with my son. But I just sort of just had the urge to turn it off.
I don't understand why we continually look for a defensive way out of everything. Or we somehow can't put two good games together. If we don't do it right tonight, there is a still opportunity we could go out. I don't think it's going to happen because Iran
it's unlikely,
the United States aren't going to score 6-7 goals or whatever. And we should easily beat Wales. But I want to see Foden play tonight.
Yes.
I would also... I'm not into Kyle Walker playing. You don't need the quickest man who played for England who's recovering from an injury on the right-hand side of the defence when he's only got Gareth Bale who can't move faster than you these days, basically, and Kiefer Moore, who's a solid man up front.
A lot of people also questioning whether Bale should even play tonight, given the way he's actually, what his form is like.
Well, their form has not been good. It's been very disappointing. Mm. But this will be a very different game. It will be like one of those old home international championships and everything. So you can't take that for granted. It depends how Wales start, and it depends who they start with and whether they bring in one or two of the other youngsters that they've got who are not bad, actually. But I think it'll be Bale and Ramsey again. I'd play Daniel James, the Forest player, and I don't know whether Johnson's going to get a chance as well, but I'd like to see that. As far as England are concerned, Foden will possibly play. Mm. If Gareth Southgate doesn't want him to play, though, don't play him.
Yeah.
Don't play him just because we're all shouting for him to play.
He doesn't really do that, though, Southgate, does he? No. He's quite stubborn. He's quite recalcitrant.
He's quite stubborn. And I would like to see Alexander Arnold at the back, on the right. Flair player, gifted player going forward. We've now begun to see with the other sides, Brazil and Spain and... even in defeat, Uruguay and Portugal and one or two others, that they're going to play with flair as we go into the knockout stage of the tournament.
Absolutely.
We have to do that. But the sports minister's going to be there tonight, so all is well.
Well, I mean, that's bound to be a jinx, isn't it? The old sports minister turning up. But what about this? I was in the Times today, it was from a Talk Sport interview, actually.
Yeah.
Hassan Al-Tawadi condemned Gary Lineker, right, and the BBC for being very racist about Qatar. So poor old Gary Lineker, who's always banging the drum for anti-racism, this and that, he's actually now being accused of being racist against Qatar for having a go at them. It also turns out that he took 1.6 million from BN Sport, which is Al Jazeera's, you know, state broadcaster. Incredible.
Yes, it was over a four-year period when he went to work for them.
Yeah.
He just vacillates, doesn't he?
Yeah,
that's all
really
he does all the time. And he'll wriggle out of one thing and then he's got himself involved in another. So when you know that sort of thing and you know that he has taken money like that in the past, what on earth is he doing with a monologue at the start of this World Cup to say how bad it is? He's actually also, I noted on his Twitter feed, Barney Rone wrote a piece in the Guardian about the World Cup of Woe.
Right.
And Gary Lineker agreed with it completely.
Hmm.
Well, there wasn't any woe when he was getting paid millions of pounds.
And there isn't any woe for him now because he just keeps banking the money.
You know, that's...
I don't object to people making a living.
I don't.
Being a hypocrite.
It's the double standards, the duplicity and everything, telling us what we should be doing
while
he's doing something completely different.
And isn't it hilarious that the BBC, again, holding themselves up to be the great arbiters of unbiased broadcasting, have now been accused by the Qataris of racism?
Well, I mean, you know, I worked for the BBC for a long time. There's always been biased broadcasting.
Yeah, of course there has. I mean, that's what it stands for, isn't it?
Right, the and biased also, broadcasting company. I want to go back to the sports minister, though, because he, of course, was another who said, he's an openly gay man, is Stuart Andrew, but he said he was going nowhere near this tournament until he sat down with the Qatari ambassador
and he
said to him, you know, what are you going to do and everything, and he allayed all his fears. So he's turning up to watch.
Yeah, it's all right.
I mean, okay, he's all right. He's going to wear his little one love
armband.
That's
all you're going to do is wear an armband now.
So all the Qatari ambassador had to do was say, don't worry about it, Stuart. You know, do what you want. Come and enjoy our hospitality. Mm. Wear the armband if you want in the royal box or whatever. But don't worry, we're not going to do anything. We're going to change everything. Of course they're not. They're never going to change anything. But at the same time, it shows you cannot, whatever you think about those countries, change the way they do it by going to that country.
No.
You have to stay away.
No. But that's just protest. The virtue signaller's way of saying that that's what you do, because it means they get to keep the money.
Government ministers go? I thought we'd boycotted it.
Well, no. Starmer said he wasn't going to go. Drakeford's apparently gone from Wales because, I mean, he would, wouldn't he? Because he's another hypocrite. And then you've got, I think it was James Cleverly who said that he was going to go. So it's all been a bit woolly. You know, nobody really knows what's going on.
Just go if you want to go, but don't tell us why we shouldn't go.
Yeah, exactly. And don't tell us why we should watch it or not watch it. You know, it's called free will, for heaven's sake. We're going to go over to Jim White, who's over there later on today. Any reason to be concerned about any of the other teams, you know, going through? I mean, Ronaldo now through to the next round, of course, after
he
that
tried. He tried to claim the goal last night.
Yeah, I saw that. I think Piers Morgan saying it touched his head.
It didn't touch his head whatsoever. There we are. That shows him again in his
fine light.
Makes
John Terry look shy and retiring.
Yeah, that was a Fernandez goal last night. They did well, Portugal.
Yeah.
There are some good sides coming through. There's going to be hiccups along the way because there are no really bad sides apart from the hosts, Qatar. Even Canada, who've gone out, they're a good side. Mm. We've got to understand that if you're not at your best, particularly when you get to the knockout stage, we could be gone if we're going through it. I'm saying we. I'm talking about England.
Yes.
I don't think Wales are going to get there. No. I think the United States will beat Iran. They'll be the two sides that go through from this group. But we've got an awful lot of work if we're to carry on and do well. But, you know, Gary Lineker will be back there tonight telling us exactly what he thinks.
I don't watch him at all. I put it on the other side. But, of course, you and I will be out at the West London studios.
Yes, we're with Jeremy Carr live.
We'll be talking to him later on. Mark's going to be out there keeping score. And I'm going to be out there just to argue with people. This is Talk TV.
On DAB+, on the app, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Of course, Elon Musk and Apple seem to be in a bit of a war of words at the moment. Laura, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. On this very dark,
it's
gloomy
dull
day.
Out there, isn't it?
Looks so bright in the studio for people watching, but out there it is.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It is very gloomy, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks a bit like the end of the world would look.
It does. Let's just stand here nestled in the bright studio
that,
lights.
There is that. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like we can be the sort of the sunflowers being held under artificial conditions so that we look happy.
That's how everyone thinks of us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, but talking about flowers and fruits.
Yes.
Elon Musk has declared war on Apple.
Right.
Which is a kind of it's his latest episode in his entertaining saga since he took over Twitter.
It's a bit like sort of nerds fighting in the corner, isn't it?
No, it's much more important than that. I'm going to bring some gravitas right
okay, here.
I firmly believe that Twitter's algorithms are the black box where democracy and free speech go to die.
Okay.
Now, I think it is dangerous to put all of our faith in one man. We talked about that last week.
Yes.
And gosh, that really annoyed lots of people who think that they know what I should care about and talk about. But I really think that the decision...
Mostly on Twitter, presumably.
Mostly on Twitter.
Yeah.
But the decision to reinstate somebody shouldn't be based upon a poll. It should be based upon clear rules. I stand by what I said. But let's rewind with what's happening with Apple. Now, I'm an Apple girl. Mm. I've been using Apple for many years.
Yes.
Back when I was a photographer, they're simply the best machines to use. Mm. I love the iPhone. But I could be turned away from Apple if they continue down this track.
Mm.
Apple was always such an inspirational company. Do you remember Steve Jobs' famous quote? He said, "Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes." Mm. He was all for genius. He was all for the people that don't fit in because he knows that they're the entrepreneurs. They're the ones that drive things forward. Well, what a long way we've come from these Silicon Valley techno-optimists to a world of big tech oligarchs telling us what we may and may not read, what we may and may not say, going way beyond national legislation and into their own very partisan, ideological, political biases.
Yeah.
So Apple have threatened to take Twitter off their app, off their iStore.
What, so you wouldn't be able to get a Twitter app if you had an Apple phone?
Not on Apple,
right.
Which is just incredible.
Mm.
Presumably because they feel threatened by Elon Musk's stated commitment to free speech.
Right.
He also claims that they have reduced their advertising on the platform, which of course is the other way to hit Twitter where it hurts.
Well, there was a lot of advertisers who withdrew their advertising, wasn't there, at the time when he took over. There was a whole list because he published the list and he said that was why he needed to introduce a pay-for scheme for people with blue ticks because the money had to come from somewhere. And he said basically there was a whole host of people, like Audi was one company, a couple of other big European sort of multinationals. And we're just looking now onto Elon Musk's tweet. The public deserves to know what really happened.
Now, this is very exciting. So this is beyond Apple, but it could be what's got Apple rattled.
Right.
So the idea that he should publish these files is fantastic. What were we talking about last week, Mike? We're always first. I said there should be a truth and reconciliation style release of all the dirty dossiers they've got on people who've been silenced and censored, because that would mark a real commitment, a kind of a year zero in a commitment to free speech. They have an absolutely filthy past, I'll say it. We've got the Project Veritas insider scoops that show staff talking about the very partisan censorship of people. You know, look at Donald Trump being deplatformed and the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop story. It's clearly very partisan. We've got their algorithms. We don't know how they work. We know that governments have a hotline into Twitter to say, take stuff down. I'm sure that I've been shadow banned in the past, and people say that they have unfollowed me without meaning to unfollow me.
I think it's happened to all of us.
They're guilty of all kinds of dirty tricks. So showing us what's happened historically on that individual micro level would be incredible if people want to request it. But in a wider sense, you know, Twitter have worked with governments and other big companies, and the public deserve to know. Mm. So he's got people rattled, including Apple, who are trying to hurt him with revenue and reach.
Yes.
Now, his idea of a subscription model, I think, in principle, is a good one. So we know this in the world of journalism, you get what you pay for. The reader, the consumer of news, is paying one way or the other. They're paying on an individual price, a subscription, or from getting advertising, sponsorship, or their data being sold.
Yeah.
Twitter's been making money through advertising and sponsorship and boosted posts, but also it has been rampant with bots and bot squads, which have been changing the narrative. Moving to a system where we pay a small amount individually to use the service could be a guarantee of the success and the freedom of the platform.
It could well be. And do you think any of these bots have been operating kind of commercially as well? Like, could they be operating on behalf of commercial organisations because it's a kind of a backdoor way of advertising or something? I don't know, but I don't think any of us really understand how Twitter works and exactly where everything fits in, if you know what I mean.
It's a really new medium, and the way that Twitter's being exploited is the subject of a great deal of academic study, and it's not properly understood. Now, we know that there are lots of bots. It's hard to get a fix on the number. No doubt Twitter could help with that if they wanted. But a conservative estimate is 9 to 15% of Twitter traffic is created by bots. That's not real people.
No.
There are different types of bots. Now, we know there are Kremlin bots. The UK government's done research on that. We know there's the Chinese 50 cent army. 50 cent? 5 cent? Anyway, 50 cent
army. Some kind of army.
Some kind of army.
There's a terracotta army. I know about that.
So we know that there are thousands upon thousands of Chinese Twitter operatives seeking to shape the online political narrative.
Yeah.
They did things like besiege US mayors to encourage them to lock down, pretending to be US citizens. Mm. They did it in Italy as well. They're doing it all over the place. I think, frankly, it would be really naive to think that even the UK, the US and other Western governments don't also do it.
Mm.
It was reported that the US military has had fake accounts taken down on Twitter and Facebook, also trying to shape the online narrative. They would call it trying to prevent counter disinformation, but in itself it is a form of disinformation. I would be amazed if companies aren't using bot squads. Some companies aren't using bot squads to help push their products and also for things like reputation management.
Well, because you see these things all the time, don't you? Like, literally kind of different ways of... I was listening this morning to somebody talking about how they now track how you type, for example, because that can lead to, you know, conclusions being drawn about how old you are, what sort of things you like to do.
Mood,
all of that. Yeah,
it's sentiment analysis.
It's quite weird, isn't it? I mean,
they know everything
about
you.
There's so much going on. This is why I always laugh when people go, I don't want an ID card. I don't want people tracking me. It's like, what do you think's happening now? What do you think is going on right now?
But they're different. Those are different. I don't think we should muddy the waters there. Now, if I go on Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg will know an awful lot about me. I don't have a personal account anymore. I don't like the way Facebook behaves. But he would know about me, you know, what my political interests are. He'd be able to make some assessments about my mood. Frankly, he'll even know what I do in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Research has shown that you can detect whether somebody's gay or straight from how they use Facebook. It knows everything about you.
Mm.
But having an ID card, which is linked to civil, societal, economic, legal functions in the world, as managed by your government, is a totally different kettle of fish.
Well, that depends on what he's doing with that information at Facebook, though. He could be giving it to the government, couldn't he?
Well, we know, of course, that political parties have tried to use Facebook. They have used Facebook, Twitter and other social media platforms to influence the result of elections by encouraging people to vote one way or even to encourage them not to vote. We know that's happened. That's why I say Twitter is potentially a black box where freedom, free speech and democracy go to die. Apple is just the tip of the iceberg. What we're seeing at the moment is some kind of insane immune response from left-wing wokerati types who are outraged that Elon Musk wants to encourage the kind of free speech that they have been trying to silence for years.
Yes.
You know, you've got big tech oligarchs thrashing around like monsters flailing, trying to stop this horrible desire for the people to have free speech.
Transparency,
God forbid.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want that?
And of course, we have online safety bills happening simultaneously all around the world. They're being talked about right now in the US, Canada, New Zealand, the EU, Ireland, the UK. It's happening everywhere. Big tech companies now wield power that is similar to nation states. And nation states are having to get to grips with that because the power now outflanks existing regulation.
And also borders.
We're in a new world.
And also borders.
And borders.
Because, you know, you can ban people from doing something in a country, but you can't ban them from saying something on social media in a country unless the social media company bans them from actually accessing the social media. You see what I'm saying? Okay, so, for example, there's a good example of it when, what's his name, Mwamba, the Tottenham player, collapsed on the football pitch years ago. And, you know, he was dead for sort of 2 minutes or something before he was revived. And there was some horrible racist abuse coming his way from the United States. And people were jumping on it quite rightly and saying, you know, you're a horrible person, blah, blah, blah. But the people in the States were going, well, it's not illegal to say what we're saying here, so you can't do anything. The police aren't coming to my door because in America you can do anything you want and you can say anything you want. And that was the case at that time. And whereas if the person had been saying it in this country, it would have probably been against some kind of law. And it would have been inciting racism, or it would have been racism. But you can't ban that everywhere in the world, can you?
No, but...
Musk doesn't now want to.
But he has said that local laws should be respected. And, of course, social media platforms can and should respect local legislation. But that's very different to what they've been doing, which is imposing their own views of what is harmful but not illegal, what they don't like in terms of, you know, partisan tweets and accounts. And think about how they handled misinformation during COVID. So, for instance, the LabLeak story was really squashed. If you look back now at some of the fact-check articles, they are frankly embarrassing. How everyone was saying, it's not that. It can't be that. When there was no available evidence one way or the other. It's a wet market. You know, people pushing their own ideology, they got that wrong. I'm thinking of all the doctors as well that were deplatformed for...
for questioning.
Raising questions about the vaccine. There's one Dr. Tony Hinton in this country. He made, like, it was like a jokey tweet about how, you know, pregnant women are encouraged not to go into saunas. You know, some picture of a sauna, but, you know, they can have a new vaccine. Now, he didn't say the vaccine was dangerous or they shouldn't do it, but just for joking, just for asking a question, he was taken off Twitter.
That was the end of him.
So it's been there's been this incredibly harsh approach to dissent from
and
the
YouTube
narrative.
Is the same, but we'll come back to that because we're just going to take a small break. Laura Dodsworth is here. We haven't talked about China yet. We will. Apparently, Chinese bots have been swamping Twitter with porn to hide news of the protest. Well, it's not working, I'm afraid. So they need to get better sensors. That's what I would suggest. Chinese ambassador has been called into the Foreign Office as well. That won't make a bit of difference. But anyway, we will continue with this after this on Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Laura Dodsworth is here with us. We've been talking about Twitter and Elon Musk and his free speech crusade. I've got a great message here from Kevin O'Sullivan, who's listening. And, of course, he'll be back at the weekend. He says, I tweeted about the lockdowns being a mistake a couple of days ago. Twitter advised me not to post it. I put this to Elon Musk on Twitter and asked him why Twitter told me to suppress my opinion. All responses to my tweet are being immediately deleted. Musk's free speech mission has a way to go.
Oh, it definitely has a way to go. I've tweeted about Twitter's algorithms and my tweets have been absolutely suppressed because nobody can see them. They have no engagement. You know, you can look at the Twitter analytics and no one's seen them. Like, well, hello, I know I tweeted it. I know it's out there in the Twitter ether, but it's got some kind of moat around it, so nobody can read it.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely, there is still
going to be still
free speech suppression.
A couple of things where you've gone, how is it that there's no responses to this? How is it that with the number of followers that you have, and the number of responses you would normally get, that on one particular tweet you're getting nothing.
And it's on algorithms.
Yeah.
It's on Twitter algorithms. Strange. They don't like you calling it out. But, you know, let's just put all of our faith in the techno king to rescue us from the demons of censorship. It's very dangerous to be relying on a techno king. But frankly, I would rather put my faith in one misfit who's taken over the company than the Wokarati management he's ousted.
I say about politicians the exact same thing. You know, people should not put their faith in one individual to rescue them from whatever it is they want rescuing from. You know, it isn't Boris Johnson. It wasn't Liz Truss. It won't be Rishi Sunak. You know, it won't be Joe Biden or Donald Trump. You know, don't have faith in other people. Just live your life and sort yourself out, is what I say.
Yeah, I might have a book out about that next year. Let's talk later.
Good.
So, on to what social media companies can do. What they should do is protect young people from harm. So, apparently, the legal but harmful part of the online safety bill is going to be dropped, which is where content could be taken down. Social media companies are going to be encouraged to take content down if it was harmful but still legal,
right,
which is obviously a censor's charter. However, what is being pushed now is the idea that minors must be protected online much better. So there are age limits for all of the social media platforms. The problem is that younger people, you know, people younger than 13 have been going on, and the platforms have probably known about it. You could arguably say they've been encouraging it, and they've been well aware of the harm that can be caused.
Mm.
Now, in the US, which is a lot more litigious, obviously, there are multiple lawsuits right now against Meta. Now, people might not agree with what these lawsuits are about, but they're alleging that Meta has caused self-harm, attempted suicides, and anorexia in young girls. This kind of thing wouldn't fly here.
Because
but, you know,
they've allowed certain posts to be made or certain pages to be set up, that kind of thing?
The argument is that these girls younger than 13, although they shouldn't have been on their Facebook, didn't take appropriate steps to stop them, and that they have an understanding that the platforms have addictive and harmful qualities that they weren't suitably protecting the children from.
Okay.
That's as much as I know about it. But I think that, you know, anybody who's got youngsters, anybody who's got children, knows that these platforms are harmful. Look, my sons, in their early teens, on both Snapchat and Instagram, were approached in their direct messages by people trying to sell them drugs and prostitutes and webcam girls.
Right.
So, you know, these platforms make a big song and dance about cracking down on the Hunter Biden laptop story. Yeah, God forbid we'd get that sort of misinformation / truth out there. But teenagers have not been protected from the harms. And there was leaked research a couple of years ago that showed that Meta, so that's Facebook and Instagram, are well aware that their platforms cause body image anxiety and mental health problems in young girls. Now, all of this is a really... it's a huge, almost impossible problem to tackle. You can have an age cutoff, that's great. But in a way, you can't ever really mitigate for this harm. The whole, you know, the idea of insecurity and showing off and jealousy in a way is literally fundamental to what Instagram's all about.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to share photos of what we're doing all the time.
No.
And when you do, you tend to share the good stuff and it makes other people feel insecure. It's a platform which is very much about how you look.
Yeah.
How you physically look and what your lifestyle looks like.
Narcissism, Gram, shouldn't they?
Well, we could call it that. I mean, there are also nice, fun social benefits. Look, I'm a proper social media addict. Yeah. It must be tackled. Maybe next year's New Year's resolution. But the problem is human psychology. It's not just the platforms. It's human psychology. You can't mitigate from these harms. You can't prevent insecurity.
No.
You can't prevent self-harm.
No.
You can't prevent young girls feeling bad about themselves. But those platforms,
but you
I think,
can
put
perhaps
those problems
not
on
steroids. But you can perhaps not encourage it, though.
Yeah, I think they put the problems on steroids.
Mm.
So I think that is probably the answer. I think probably the answer is that there should be an age cutoff which is very strictly enforced with ID, with verification.
Yes, which is usually the way that you would think that would solve it. But again, I mean, kids do have a way of getting around things. I mean, I'm the same. I've got various children who have been looking at stuff that they probably shouldn't have been looking at. But it's very hard to stop them from doing it if they're part of that world. Unless you go down the whole kind of, you know, I'm going to raise my children as if they weren't actually living in
Amish.
This century. Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's the only
way. I was
going to
say that.
To
I was hesitating because I wasn't sure if I could say that. But
oh, really,
you know,
you can
Amish,
rely on me.
I can rely on you.
Can rely on me.
There used to be an
it.
Amish community down in Sussex. Actually, I'm not sure if they're still there. Where you just don't give them a phone and you don't give them access to a computer and you don't, you know. But it's ridiculous. I mean, that
I fancy
been...
it these days. I'm thinking the Amish should
I
get it
know.
Right. I mean, social media brings so many benefits, but it is so harmful. Look, we know from research that when your phone is in the room with you, not even using it, it reduces your cognitive abilities.
True.
We know it's addictive. From the moment, from the moment you wake up, you've probably checked your phone 20 times before breakfast.
Yeah, but how realistic
Ding!
Would
and
it be?
And then you're on there for an hour, slot machine effect, you keep
but
going
how
through.
Realistic would it be, though, to do that to your children and then at some point in their life they suddenly discover this world that they have been so far, you know, prevented from being a part of? And how would that then affect them?
Okay.
That might be worse.
We don't say there should be gradations with gambling. casinos, alcohol. We don't go, well, you know, from the age of 13, we'll let you have one unit a day,
yeah,
or we'll let you gamble £10 a day. We don't do that. Mm. We say if something's harmful, there's a cut-off point. Because when you're an adult, it is up to you to protect yourself from harms. And I think that's what a lot of people found really objectionable about the online safety bill. The idea that you and I need protection from dangerous political ideas,
yes,
or misinformation. You know, we've got brains. We'll take a look at it. Mm. We'll take a view on it. We'll look after ourselves. Yeah. If I'm addicted to Twitter, it's on me.
Yeah.
Okay, it's up on me to manage my life. It's not the same with children. We just protect them from harms, full stop.
Okay.
There has to be an age cutoff. 13 might not be enough. I mean, I think maybe a lot more child psychologists should be involved in this. Mm. And the that is one thing the social media companies should be held to account over.
Yeah, I think so. Final thought, only got about a minute. The China protests, interesting reaction in this country.
Yeah, really interesting reaction. I'm really glad that people are horrified because it's genuinely horrific.
Mm.
What's unsurprising but disappointing is a real double standard that protests in different countries are held to. In this country, they were called conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers. China, they're being positioned as freedom fighters. Now, on one hand, these lockdowns have gone on for different periods of time. But if they haven't worked in China, where they've been locked down for, 100 days or something? Yeah. If that didn't work, of course our lockdowns weren't going to work. And people that protested for their freedoms were utterly derided.
Mm. They were, absolutely right. Fascinating stuff. Laura, good to see you again. Thank you very much indeed. Laura Dodsworth back, of course, next Tuesday. Go and find her stuff on Twitter if it hasn't been shadow banned. You know what I mean. 03444991000. We're going to talk about China coming up because Gavin Mortimer is here to talk to us as well from Paris with the latest from France on the migrants issue. And then Rob Clark from Civitas. He's going to talk to us about China and what is going on there. This is Talk TV.
The home of common sense. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV with you all the way through until 1 o'clock, of course. The sky is looking a tad brighter, but not very much. It's very dull out there. Very nice in Qatar, of course, where the big game is on tonight. And you'll be able to listen to all of that on Talk Sport. It's Wales against England. Also, Jeremy Carl live from 7. Mark Saggers will be there. I'll be there. We'll be talking about a great many things. But we will also keep you updated on the football if that's what you need to know. Sean in Grimsby says this. Mike, as I sit here eating my bacon bun, the gent who runs the cafe has just mentioned that he had a break booked to go to York this weekend. The only break he will have had all year. A true hard-working gent has now been told his booking has been cancelled because his hotel has been taken over by migrants. This must stop. Well, I think that's the problem for an awful lot of people. They're discovering that basically they cannot find a hotel anywhere in this country that has not in some way been double booked or pre-booked for an awful lot of migrants. I've heard from people over the course of the last week telling me that they went to a particular hotel, I'm not going to give the name of it, where they thought it would normally not be one that was used for migrants, but they'd also booked migrants into that hotel as well, even though they were still taking bookings from other members of the public who were paying good money, basically, for a room. Absolutely extraordinary. Ed in Cornwall says, Mike, the Albanians weren't only giving the middle finger to the government, they were also giving the middle finger to the British public. This is, of course, a video that we showed you a little bit earlier today. We're going to speak to Gavin Mortimer now. Let's just have another look at what happened last night in central London. This is around Parliament Square last night, Albanian Independence Day being celebrated by an awful lot of people who held up an awful lot of traffic and made an awful lot of noise for hours on end. A lot of flags being waved, a lot of car horns being tooted, the police standing there supposedly begging them to get off the streets. But I mean, this is not a scene that I think anybody has ever seen in this country before. People on Twitter are saying, oh yeah, but why shouldn't they celebrate their National Day? Well, it just seems a bit odd, doesn't it? There's people doing things in cars which would be mostly illegal, that would get you arrested if you were doing it in any other situation. What is going on? Let's talk to Gavin. Hello, Gavin, how are you doing? Gavin?
Hello?
Hi. There's a bit of a delay on the line, I think, so I'll try not to confuse everybody too much. Extraordinary scenes last night in the centre of London. I don't know whether you've ever seen anything like this in Paris, but we've also got figures this morning that show that asylum-seeking applications from Albania are accepted in this country to the tune of about 55%, whereas in France it's only 2%. In most of Europe it's less than 5%. Only one or two other countries actually accept around about 10%. So there's an awful lot of Albanians coming here, and obviously that's the reason, because they get accepted as asylum seekers.
Yeah, absolutely. The UK's long been seen as a a soft touch. And so it's attractive for people, asylum seekers and economic migrants, because they know they're going to be well looked after. They're going to be put up in hotels. And in France, that's not the case. In France, there's tented cities everywhere. There's just there's not the the willingness to accommodate who are people who are essentially here illegally.
Mm. No, that's absolutely right. But I mean, have you ever seen anything like that in Paris? You know, where you've got basically a group of nationals from another country celebrating their own Independence Day, waving flags. And driving in some, I mean, I know people are saying, what difference does it make what cars are in? They're in some very expensive cars. I think there's a car there that's, well, under 100,000 quid.
Well, we're seeing this more and more, Mike, aren't we? Because just a couple of days ago, we saw in Belgium riots from Moroccan fans after their Morocco beat Belgium in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And this has made the papers in France, because France hate Tunisia quite soon, tomorrow, I think. And you know, France has had problems before with Algerian fans, and there's a very famous case. Think about 20 years ago when France played Algeria at the Stade de France, and there was huge Algerian whistling of a French national anthem. So President Jacques Chirac, who was at the time president, actually came down and stopped the game and said this is unacceptable, and sent a very clear message. But nonetheless, it continues, and this is what happens. You know, this is the side of multiculturalism that no one wants to talk about.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. And, you know, the left, those who believe in sort of unbridled immigration, say, well, what's the problem? Do you have the same problem? I've been getting comments like, you know, well, what do you say about St. Patrick's Day? Well, I don't see people driving around in £100,000-plus Mercedes AMGs waving Irish tricolours at sort of midnight in the middle of Westminster.
No, absolutely not. And you know, you don't get British people celebrating St. George's Day in France or anywhere else for that matter. You just got to watch those images there of what happened in London last night, and it was goading the British public, if you like. It was this ostentatious display. Look at us, we are milking the system. We're here in our cars, and there's nothing you can do about it. And frankly, there isn't anything we can do about it. So it seems, Mike, at the moment, because they just keep coming.
And we're not just here in our cars. We're here in our big Mercedes. We're here in our Porsche 4x4s. We're here in our Bentleys. I mean, these are people with a lot of money. And what we do know from the Home Office, and what we do know as well from prison statistics, is that Albania is by far and away the highest represented country in our prison population outside of the UK itself. And we also know from anecdotal evidence that an awful lot of the drug gangs which are now running drugs in Britain are Albanian.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a piece about this for The Spectator a couple of weeks ago, just saying the highlighting the influence for over 20 years of the Albanian mafia and how it's just slowly spread west, Germany, Austria, Belgium, into France, and now it's into Britain. And this is why the number of small boats has suddenly increased, because the Albanian mafia 5-6 years ago realised how easy it was, and that no one was stopping them. And with Theresa May's Slavery Act, once you're here, you know, you're not going to be deported.
Yeah.
And so it's proved. And, you know, we see about that Suella Braverman has come up with this well, new initiative of fast-tracking asylum seekers to safe countries. But if you actually read the text, Mike, which is in some of the newspapers today, you see that it's a rehash of a new Labour policy. Mm. And indeed it is. It's a policy that was introduced in 2002 by David Plunkett, who at the time was growing concerned at how easy it was, and again, how attractive Britain was. That was 20 years ago. And here we are, Mike, still having the same conversations, only the problem has got 100 times worse.
Yeah, it really has. We haven't got a lot of time, Gavin, but let's talk about a piece you wrote in The Spectator as well about Qatar. And how its wealth is kind of, you know, really pretty overpowering in terms of its cultural reach into Western Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got no problem, Mike, with Qatar saying, you know, this is an Islamic country, you respect our culture, so now alcohol. Fine, okay. But then the influence of Qatar using their vast wealth through organisations such as the Muslim Brotherhood in France, Belgium, in Holland in particular, and the French press, to their credit, are very honest and very courageous in highlighting this. There's been numerous articles and books just saying how they promote campaigns for the hijab and other Islamic dress. Yeah. And that's not part of Western culture, just as alcohol isn't part of Islamic culture.
Right.
But, you know, respect is a mutual thing, but it's not, as from what we can see, Qatar wants us to respect their culture. Well, it disrespects Western culture.
Yes. It's interesting, isn't it, that there's so many. I mean, we've got the BBC today and Gary Lineker, St. Gary, being accused of racism by the Qatari government because of the way they've been covering the football, which has come as a bit of a shock to the BBC.
I mean, absolutely. I agree. I think some of it has been some of the coverage of, Qatar has been disrespectful. We're not taking into consideration their culture. We knew what we were getting into in 2010, Mike, and it's too late now. When Qatar held the World Athletics Championships, it wasn't this fuss. It's just now, and it's with virtual signalling. And France have taken an approach, as I said in this article, when in Rome, do as the Romans. So they're not virtual signalling the way that the Germans, the Danes, the English are. They accept that they're in an Islamic culture, and that's the way things are. But, you know, it would be nice if Qatar accepted that in the West we have a different culture too.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. Gavin, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Gavin Mortimer, writer for The Spectator, of course, with his take on the situation regarding the Albanian influx of asylum seekers and why Britain alone seems to be the one European country that actually takes more and more applications than everybody else put together. What's that all about? This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. The place to be, of course, for the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It's the home of common sense. It's the home of free speech as well. We've been talking about a great many things this morning, including China, including the Qatar World Cup, of course. We've got Wales taking on England. We've also got two or three other games of some interest. Ecuador, Senegal at three, Netherlands, Qatar as well. And also Iran versus the USA, which is picking up an awful lot of interest in America, as you can imagine. We're going to talk to Jim White very shortly. Talk Sport presenter who's live in Doha. He had a very interesting interview yesterday with Hassan Al-Tawadi, the head of Qatar's World Cup organisation, who had a bit of a go at Gary Lineker and a bit of a go at the BBC in general. We'll play that clip for you in a moment. But first of all, we want to tell you what else is going on. I'm on with Jeremy Kyle tonight from 7 o'clock when the football's on, of course. But there's plenty of other things to talk about as well, because we're going to talk as well about the energy crisis in this country, because it didn't actually happen today that the National Grid issued warnings to people not to use too much electricity. They decided not to issue the warning in the end. But what they want to do is basically offer you money if you will use less electricity at peak times, which seems to me to be a rather odd thing to do. And as you look around the cities and towns of this country and all the Christmas decorations and all the Christmas lights that are going up, if we've got a shortage of electricity, how come their lights are all on? Just a question. But let's talk to Jim White, who's out there in Doha covering the World Cup, of course, for Talk Sport, the one place where you can hear every single game, every single moment of the World Cup. You won't miss any of it. Jim, a very, very good afternoon to you.
Mike, how are you?
Yeah,
you're looking well.
Very well indeed. How's it all going? Are you keeping Mr. Jordan under control? Are you having to spend more time with him than you'd like to?
Let me tell you, Mike, when I have breakfast in the morning here, Simon Jordan goes and plays this thing called paddle tennis.
Oh, yeah.
Across the road, which is a strange kind of mixture, if you like, of tennis and outdoor squash. He's quite good at it. But I must tell you this, Mike, at the paddle tennis event this morning, none other, and I mean this, I'm being honest, than the Emir of Qatar was present at the paddle tennis event and spoke to Simon and commended Simon as a terrific radio broadcaster. You are the man, he told him, we are led to believe, who comes away with all the big words that none of us understand.
Right.
But the Emir of Qatar was hugely complimentary to your friend and mine, Simon Jordan, only this morning.
Well, it's very good news that Simon Jordan's finally met somebody with more money than him. Because obviously, you know, he doesn't like that sort of thing. He likes to be the richest guy in the room, doesn't he?
He does indeed. He does indeed. Unlike Simon, the Emir has held on to his money, though. But that's another matter. I didn't say that. No, Simon's having a blast out here. He's proven to be very popular with a lot of people, not least fans of England and Wales who are here in big numbers for this match tonight.
Yes, we've just been speaking to Holly Hunter, who was out, Holly Hudson, rather, who was out in the Intercontinental with a load of Wales fans in a very good voice, as you would expect them to be. But let's talk a bit about that great interview you had yesterday, Jim, with Hassan Al-Tawadi, the head of Qatar's World Cup organisation. Have a look at this.
Do you understand the strong feelings from some, Hassan, towards this tournament with these debates over human rights and, of course, the acceptance of the LGBT community, the BBC not showing the opening ceremony? You were livid about that. The likes of Roy Keane on ITV saying that the World Cup should never be here in the first place.
When it comes to statements that come out, for example, from Roy or from Gary or whoever else it is, there was no engagement. It's a statement that comes out based on no engagement.
No one pushed back on it.
You know.
Why was that? Did they not want to engage with you?
Well, the sad part, for example, for me, Gary Lineker, you know, as I was growing up, I looked up to him. You know, for me, when I was in Sheffield, I used to look at, you know, they think it's all over. And for me, it was a show that I used to love watching. I loved the banter. I loved the sense of humor. I loved everything about it. And so for me, it's very disappointing that Gary never bothered to engage. And I say it openly. He never bothered to engage. We reached out. We reached out many times. In February, we reached out over 3 or 4 times, specifically requesting to engage with Gary, to sit down and say, we understand your position. Give us the opportunity to put our case in front. At least hear us out. If you don't agree then, that's fine. That's your decision. And that's your judgment. But we never got the chance. There was never the desire to listen to our part of the story.
Fascinating interview, Jim, and a fascinating man. It's been quite confusing, I guess, for an awful lot of people. How has it kind of settled down now a little bit? Has it become more about the football?
Yes, it has. And that's a good question, Mike. Now that we're well into the second week, a lot of people are concentrating more on football. But I can tell you that interview that Simon and I pulled off with Hassan Al-Tawadi has gone viral out here. Everybody's talking about it. Hassan himself was saddened by the fact, and even off camera, Mike, he was talking to us afterwards, seriously saddened by the fact that many individuals in the media had declined to take part in an exchange of views before a ball was kicked out here. Mm. They had reached out to many media outlets, and he was saying that they were very disappointed that not many came back, that the numbers that came back weren't the numbers that they predicted would come back to engage about the tournament. And of course, only in July, I came out here and I interviewed Nasser Al-Khattar, the chief executive of the tournament, who said, everybody's welcome. And we're delighted that you've taken the trouble to come out here so that we can tell you that everybody is welcome. And they're holding to that. They're trying their level best. They want this to be seen as the best World Cup ever. And they're convinced that it will be, Mike. But they want to hear their voice just as much as they're hearing all the other voices and all the other noise around this World Cup 2022.
Absolutely right. I mean, interesting as well that the Times has picked up on the story this morning as well. Big spread on 6 and 7, talking about how he says basically that he believes that Gary Lineker and the BBC's approach to the World Cup in Qatar has been a kind of borderline racist, the way that they've been doing it. And then there's another story this morning, Jim, about Gary Lineker, in which it says that after the World Cup bid was won by Qatar, he took 1.6 million quid from beIN Sport, which is the sporting arm of Al Jazeera, the state broadcaster in Qatar. So it's a bit hypocritical of him, really, to be so critical, if you like, of Qatar.
Well, that's right. I mean, and he was extremely sincere about how he felt, Mike. He feels that he was telling us he grew up in England and he used to watch Lineker on television, and that this was a figure that Hassan Al-Tawadi himself used to look up to and still does. I think they do hope to engage with Gary before the tournament comes and goes. But certainly there was this massive air of disappointment on their part about this lack of engagement and this lack of willingness as he perceived it. And one thing I would say to you, Mike, both Simon and I were quite surprised by how strongly Hassan Al-Tawadi, who's a major figure regarding this tournament, how strongly he chose to articulate himself to us yesterday.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, Gary Lineker tweeted yesterday that neither he nor his agent had any contact with anyone. But as you know, it's very possible that they reached out to somebody in the BBC or they didn't know how to react, or how to get Lineker directly. I mean, there's always ways that you can perhaps reach out to people without them finding out that you ever did.
Well, that's right. And you've been in this business long enough to know, Mike, there's two sides to every story, of course. But, what frustrated them and what Arthur Waddy was persistent with yesterday was we are just frustrated that they did not come back to us. Whether the they is Lineker and his people or the they is the BBC, well, that's a matter for conjecture. But it was this lack of desire to engage with them that they found particularly saddening and particularly offensive.
Yes. It's an incredible situation, really, and it's shown up, I think, Qatar for perhaps not being as bad a place as people have been making it out to be, and perhaps some of the media coverage has not been as good as it ought to have been.
Well, that's right. I mean, Mike, all we can do is speak from our own experience here. Simon and I have been made to feel very welcome. Everywhere we've gone, the doors are open. At the matches, last night I was at Portugal up against Uruguay with our producer Luke Gregory, and he and I were sitting in the stadium, very good seats, surrounded by Uruguayan fans, surrounded by Portuguese fans, surrounded by fans, Mike, I've got to tell you, from all around the globe. And one thing that's significant, I just want to make this clear, Mike, I think the fact that there is no alcohol on sale at the stadiums is such a good thing, Mike.
Yeah,
it makes for such a great carnival atmosphere, a family atmosphere. There was a family of Uruguayans behind us last night, Mike, with an 18-month-old baby. And they were there loving the atmosphere. Yeah. And their nation lost. But it didn't seem to matter to them too much. They were too busy taking pictures of each other, pictures of the fans around them, pictures of the event. They could have reached out and touched Cristiano Ronaldo at one stage. We were that close to the pitch. It's marvellous, Mike. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I said this to somebody last week, you know, when the announcement came that there was going to be no alcohol sales in the stadium. Well, you can't get alcohol in a British stadium unless you happen to be in hospitality. So I don't know what the fuss was about, to be honest. And I'm like you. You know, I've resisted taking my kids to football quite a lot because there's still a kind of an edge to it. You know, there's a lot of swearing. There's a lot of men drinking and being quite drunk. And I don't see why you have to do that in order to watch football.
Exactly. We were told about there'll be a huge Qatari police presence at the stadiums. There is a huge Qatari police presence at the stadiums, Mike. But we walked up, Luke and I walked up on a couple of occasions last night to the police to say, we're slightly confused. These tickets, where is this entrance? Whatever the entrance was, they could not have been more helpful. And in fact, one of them escorted us to the entrance and his final parting shot was, have a great game. Whoever wins, have a great game. Enjoy it.
Yeah. That's good. Let's get to the football then. Finally, tonight, England-Wales, or is it Wales-England? What do you reckon?
Is it Wales-England? I reckon the atmosphere will be terrific. It's a kind of home nations match over here in another part of the world, which makes it intriguing to say the least. It's largely thought that Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey for the Welsh are, with all due respect, getting to that stage. They could be described as somewhat over the hill. We'll see. It comes down to whether or not they play from the start and whether or not they have big games. No disrespect to the nine other Welsh on the pitch, but it's a massive, massive ask for Wales. And you have to think England have the form players. England, Mike, should win. Of course they should win. But you never know. You never know. And it should be a belter of a game, that's for sure.
Absolutely brilliant. And it's all on TalkSport, of course, as is every game. Brilliant to talk to you, Jim. Thank you very much indeed. We don't normally get to do this because we do shows at the same time. So what a pleasure to talk to Jim White. Thank you very much indeed. Ecuador, Senegal as well. Netherlands, Qatar. And, of course, Iran, USA. But the big one, England, Wales, 7 p.m. tonight. I will be with Jeremy Kyle, as will Mark Saggers. We'll keep you updated throughout that show. But we'll have plenty else to talk about, of course, as well. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, more of your calls. Plus, I'll be asking you, if you're going to turn down the heat just because the national grid say they haven't got enough energy for everybody. Well, I'm not. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.